Hello.
This is Joya Italiano.
This is Jeff Ekman.
And welcome to Oh, That's a Thing, a podcast about the real science and sci-fi movies.
Even if you haven't seen the movie, don't worry. We use the movies as jumping off points for some pretty awesome and real topics.
That's right. We're not experts at all. We're actually just a couple of goons who Googled some stuff. But this stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah, so sit back, relax, maybe learn a thing or two. Here we go.
Here we go. The 13th floor. 13th floor.
How many floors?
There's 13 floors. This movie, huh?
Yeah. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Sorry. Didn't see you there.
When did you get here? Anyway. Yeah. We watched the movie, the classic 1999 film, The 13th Floor.
Yeah.
Starring Greg.
Seems like a Greg.
He's a Craig.
Ugh. Yikes.
Craig Bierko.
Yeah.
And Gretchen Mol. And it came out the same year as The Matrix.
Which is wild.
And it is a poor man's The Matrix.
It is. Very poor. Very destitute.
I think I said to you, it's the Deep Impact to The Matrix's Armageddon.
Totally. Yeah.
Which it's is like being a little mean to Deep Impact, actually.
Right, exactly. Because Deep Impact, I remember being like, dude, this is serious. Yeah. I got really upset when that started going.
Oh,
I was
deeply impacted. Yeah.
But this, I mean, okay, so this movie is based off of the 1964 science fiction novel called Simulacron 3.
Simulacron 3.
But it was also released under the title Counterfeit World as well.
Which I think is a better title.
Much better because, I don't know, Simulacron. Right? Simulacron.
It just sounds very like 60s sci-fi, but I guess it was 60s sci-fi.
But it was interesting in the book that it's a story of this virtual city that it's like this completely simulated environment that was apparently for marketing research. It was developed by a scientist to reduce the need for opinion polls. So inhabitants of this little sim city or whatever, they have their own consciousness but are unaware that they're only electronic impulses in a computer.
That's a great idea.
Right?
Of like using it to simulate possible outcomes of stuff.
Yeah.
There was a recent Doctor Who episode that was entirely based on this like alien species that has simulated every possible situation of the world, and then they're planning on using the simulation to take over the world.
Oh, okay.
We haven't listened to the trailer.
Let's listen.
On the 13th floor of a corporate tower, a team of scientists have created a portal to a simulated universe. Now, after 6 years of testing, they are about to cross the boundaries of reality.
When my mind is jacked in and I'm walking around experiencing 1937, my body stays here.
They thought they could maintain control.
You can't just keep plugging your brain into this machine and not expect to be affected by it.
But once they opened the door...
These people are real.
Is this real?
The experiment turned on them.
You think one of them units crawled up an extension cord and killed his maker?
Could call it the end of the world.
So yeah, that's that.
Yeah, it's a virtual world, and they go in, and then it turns out that their world is virtual world.
That's right.
Yeah. Which, it made a big impact on me when I first saw this. I probably saw it like a few months before I saw The Matrix.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, The 13th Floor.
Yeah, have you guys ever seen that? And then The Matrix
really
happened.
Things.
And then
yeah,
you're like, oh.
Everybody was like, what?
Well, I mean, at least what I like about this is the story that it's based on was one of the first... you know, utterings of the virtual reality world. So I can appreciate that. It's just since that time, we've seen so many really cool fucking movies that about this that are executed in a way better fashion than, you know, we're able to. Although Vincent D'Onofrio, man.
I do love Vincent
D'Onofrio.
He's
that 1930s bartender, but then also the like 90s like, hey, man.
I'm a computer programmer, bro. Let's start off by talking about the number 13. Because this movie, I mean, it has nothing to do with the 13th floor, except they happen to hit that number on an elevator.
A couple of times.
So, triskaidekaphobia is an extreme suspicion of the number 13. And as a phobia, it's more than just a mild discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people with this condition get acute anxiety when they come across the number 13. They get nauseous, there's vomiting, difficulty breathing, rapid heartbeat, sweating, feelings of panic.
Do they specify if that's like hearing the word 13 or seeing the number?
I think it's just people who come across or confront the object of their fear, the object being 13.
So any, like 13 of anything really could be spooky.
Right. Baker's dozen.
That's bizarre, man. There's so many goddamn phobias.
Because, you know, people think that it's no coincidence that Princess Diana died at the 13th pillar of Pont d'Alma.
Oh, God, no. Or that, that's the equivalent of being like, I found Jesus and Mary in my French toast.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of these. You know, the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster occurred on the 113th flight of the shuttle. Mm-hmm. Not to mention Apollo 13, which launched at 1:13 p.m., also 13:13 on the military clock. Right. It entered the moon's gravitational pull on April 13th, and which is also when the oxygen tank explosion.
Friday the...
It was not a Friday. It was not Friday the 13th. Now, like, part of this might come from the fact that 12 is seen as, like, a perfect number. Like, 12 months, 12 hours on a clock, a dozen is 12.
Right.
And so 13 is, like, an outlier.
But which is interesting because all of that's created, too. Like, we decided there's going to be 12 months. Right. We decided there's going to be 12 hours. Yeah.
But something about the number 12 is, like, common in societies and, you know, I mean, it's, hey, 2012.
Dozen, yeah, totally. I get it.
But there's also, like, Tupac was killed on Friday the 13th. The Costa Concordia sank on Friday the 13th. But it's, like...
But the coincidence is coincidence.
Yeah,
I mean?
Exactly,
like,
we have this
human tendency to ascribe meaning when there is none, like people making a wish at 11-11, you know, whatever, kind of shit. Or, like... What is it? Your golden birthday when you're born, like you're turning the year that your day is on. Like I turned 28 on March 28th, and so that's my, like, golden birthday. You're like,
what is the meaning here?
Like, shut up.
What is the meaning?
Right.
Well, yeah, because fear of Friday the 13th is called Frigastrakidekaphobia.
Too much.
After Frigg, the Norse goddess after whom Friday is named in English.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, because I've seen a couple of different spellings. Well, did you see that it's also partly traced to the Bible because Judas was the 13th guest at the Last Supper?
Yeah, well, because there's a myth that it goes back to the Code of Hammurabi. The writers of the code left out the 13th law on the list, but in reality, the list has no numbers.
Huh.
So, like, a lot of people cite that as the beginnings of it. But yeah, 13, Judas was the 13th to sit for the Last Supper. Loki was apparently the 13th Norse god. You know, the superstition, though, was not blatant until the 17th century.
Uh-huh. But even since then, so even though, you know, yeah, Friday the 13th, but there's still, like, buildings in Manhattan that won't include a 13th floor.
That's the thing, because skyscrapers have only been around since 1885.
Right.
They first had to invent the elevator before they could invent the skyscraper.
Right.
And so it's pretty recent, and hotels try to not have a 13th floor, mostly because of a fear of alienating the 13% of people. That's according to a Gallup poll that said that they'd be bothered by it.
13% of people that would be bothered by
the 13th floor. Holy shit. How did I not even... Oh, my God. I was like,
winky.
Well, I really didn't...
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That's pretty wild. Yeah.
What an unlucky
number.
Well,
I even saw... I was looking at this article in The Atlantic or whatever, and I think it was released in 2015, and it was saying out of 629 buildings in Manhattan with 13 or more floors, only 55 labeled the 13th floor as the 13th. So 9%.
It's a very common practice to not do it. And it can also get confusing for firemen who have to be aware of which buildings do and don't have a 13th floor.
Because some of them are like 12B or they just go, they do M, like the mezzanine or whatever.
Right, but also I've seen that M is the 13th letter of the alphabet. So
right, totally. You know,
and also, because I did look into, like, are there any buildings that still build the 13th floor and just don't call it that? And it's rare, but sometimes they'll make it like a maintenance floor or a mechanical floor.
Exactly.
And that's what M can
stand
for.
I feel like most new buildings, they're kind of like over it, but at the time they were. Or like if the 13th was the top floor, they'd be like penthouse. And that's easy to go about.
Well, some motels don't have a 13th room, you know? Like it's just in case somebody has a problem with staying in that room, they just rather not have the issue.
Yeah.
But, like, conspiracy theorists think that when the 13th floor is missing in, like, a government building, it's like... It means that that's where the secret stuff is.
Oh, of course. That's the Area 51 style. Like, oh boy.
I think you and I both feel that luckiness, lucky numbers and stuff. Yeah. You can ascribe meaning to them, but effectively we feel that they're very likely to be meaningless.
Yeah.
One thing that illustrates that is, okay, in the Western world, the number 13 is unlucky. But in Italy, it's considered a lucky number.
Right.
And Colgate University was started by 13 men with $13 and 13 prayers.
Yeah.
So whatever that means. So 13 is considered a lucky number there, and Friday the 13th is the luckiest day. But they see Friday the 17th as an unlucky day.
I was saying before we even started recording, like, I have no issue if someone has a favorite number. If you want to get the number 13 tattooed on you because you just think it looks cool. Like, I really don't care. It's when there's, like, deep meanings. Like, I'll get into numerology in a little bit here. But just, you're like, dude, what? I mean, and the similar with, like, a Y2K or something that has anything to do with New Year happening. It's like, it happened somewhere else.
Well, Y2K is slightly different.
It is different. But in terms of, like, the time, where it's like, if the world was going to end, it would have ended the first time it struck midnight, not when it struck specifically in your city, dude.
Well, I guess. I mean, like, we're just making up when it strikes midnight anyway. Exactly. So why would it be on the dot?
They're all right.
But in Shanghai, there are elevators with no floors 13 and 14 and 4. And the reason, like, in Asia, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, Japan, Korea, and Vietnam, like, they all find 4 to be bad luck. And that's because the word sounds like the word for death.
Death, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, like, if there was a floor titled Death Teen,
we'd be like, maybe I'm not going to label. I don't want to live on the death teenth floor.
Yeah, exactly.
So
85% of buildings with Otis brand elevators did not have a floor named 13th floor.
Otis brand?
Mm-hmm.
Did Otis have a problem? What does that mean, Otis brand? I don't know.
That's just Otis's internal numbers.
Oh, okay.
Like the elevators company. Like, they happen to have their own numbers.
Company. Yeah, I was what?
What does Otis know? Science. So in the movie, they exchange messages within the virtual world. And so I was looking into situations where people had used or exchanged messages over, like, video games and virtual worlds that exist in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Edward Snowden documents, it was revealed that the NSA and GCHQ sent spies into online games like World of Warcraft and Second Life to seek out terrorist or criminal chat, and even to recruit valuable informants, such as people who, like, work in foreign embassies who happen to play World of Warcraft.
Wow.
The government was afraid that people could secretly communicate, move money, or plot terrorist attacks through the games. But it doesn't really seem to actually be a common practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Peter W. Singer of the Brookings Institute said that for terror groups looking to keep their communications secret, there are far more effective and easier ways to do so than putting on a troll avatar.
Yeah.
But the New York Times reported in that GCHQ sent operatives into Second Life in 2008 and helped police in London break a ring of criminals that were selling stolen credit card information in the virtual world.
Wow.
So it did work, at least once.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, though, there were so many spies operating in Second Life that a deconfliction group was suggested to stop the CIA, FBI, and Pentagon from spying on each other.
Whoa, that's like Inception level of, like...
Yeah, there were so many spies on these systems that they were spying on each other, and they had to, like, create a situation to make sure that they weren't doing that.
That's crazy. Weren't we talking about, was it Google that would hire, like, young hackers to be able to...
Well,
to, like,
there's,
break into
like,
the
bug
Apple.
Bounties.
Yeah, bug bounties
to try
to
get, like, young hackers to work for the good guys. There's, like, they call them white hat operations instead of black hat operations, where you're there doing good for the company and doing hacking to expose the security flaws rather than doing hacking to exploit the security flaws.
Right.
There's better ways for terrorists to communicate that don't have to use online things, which most of which are recording all of your conversations anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I just thought it was interesting that the CIA was like, we got to get in on this World of Warcraft thing, make sure that nobody is doing anything bad.
Kids today.
No stone left unturned.
Yeah. Science. Similarly to, like, the unlucky numbers and that kind of stuff, I was looking into numerology because I've gone online and done some of their little numerology calculators. You either enter in your birth date or your full name, and there's all of these numbers attached. But let's get into at least
there's just the numbers history. Attached to your name and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I'm excited to hear this.
So the earliest roots of numerology are somewhat of a mystery, but some of the earliest written records appear in Egypt and Babylon. The Chaldean system was developed under the influence of the Hebrews, and there's also compelling evidence that numerology was used thousands of years ago in China, Rome, Japan, and Greece. But the main credit for modern day numerology is usually given to Greek philosopher Pythagoras, who you might know of as the Pythagorean theorem guy, which is about triangles, right? And like angles and all that shit.
Finding the hypotenuse?
Yeah, exactly, right? God, I remember those geometry days. They are gone now, so I did not refresh my Pythagorean theorem stuff. But so he was born in Greece around 590 BC. He became this well-respected philosopher and mathematician of his day. And when he was around 50 years old, he established a school in Crotona, Italy, and it was called the Semicircle, and it was more like a secret society, which is pretty interesting. It was open to both men and women, which I found pretty cool considering the time, but it adhered to a strict code of secrecy, and the students were not allowed to put any of his teachings in writing. So it's kind of hard to, like, even though all of this stuff has been attributed to him, a lot of the stuff that he taught during his life wasn't written down until after he died.
Why?
Secret society, man. They're too, I know, exactly.
The first rule about, like, psychology club, or...
Yeah,
no, God damn it. Philosophy club.
Yeah, it's like, you want your thoughts to be shared. You're a philosopher, dude. Like, what are you talking about? Anyway, so he was primarily interested in the principles behind mathematics. He felt that the entire universe could be explained through numbers. So he created the system that was later expanded by other Greek philosophers, but because he started the system of numerology, he's attributed as being like the father of modern day.
Interesting.
So it is.
Well, I mean, people do believe that the whole universe can be explained with numbers.
Oh, so, totally. I mean,
like,
and
that's something that fully seems to be panning out.
Well, and
out.
Considering like, engineering and mathematics are
so
entwined. You know, it's like
what the world runs on.
So blown away by math minds. I've not been one of those people. So like the power of math and numbers, like I'm all about. But being able to explain the universe specifically, like personality traits, is where I'm like, boo. So numerology is.
You're saying explaining your own personality traits because your name has a certain number of letters.
My grandma, like used to do numerology. My mom understood and all that. But that, you know, it was all very like. What are we doing here? Are we doing seances too? Like, what's
going on?
Well,
it sounds like it's very similar to getting your astrology.
Correct. You know. Numerology for dummies. Let's kind of break it down a little bit. A person's birth chart consists of four basic numbers. Three of those numbers are drawn from the full name, from your first, middle, and last name.
Okay.
One of the numbers is drawn from your birth date. So then numerologists analyze the numbers to discover clues about the individual's character, destiny, and life cycles. Does this sound like logical science to you so far? Each letter is assigned a single-digit number based on its sequential place in the alphabet. The letters A through I are numbers 1 through 9, with the remaining letters reduced to one of those through simple addition. For example, like the letter J is the 10th letter, so you would do 1 plus 0 equals 1. So the value of... It basically starts over after 9.
Okay.
Goes in cycle. Yeah, exactly.
Because, dude.
Because. Because 9.
That's the highest single digit.
Right. So the three birth name numbers are determined by adding first all the vowels that occur, then all the consonants, and finally, the total of all the letters. The total of the consonants is your outer personality number. So the consonants in your name, all added together with their values, equals your outer personality number, which relates to physical appearance, health, and the impression the person makes on others through dress and behavior.
Okay.
Right. What my parents decided to name me is, that's what that's about. Okay. The numerical total of the vowels, A, E, I, and U, not Y, note, that's called your soul number.
Okay.
So this is thought to reflect the person's true inner self, encompassing ambitions and motivations, judgments and attitudes and feelings. The total of the entire birth name is known as the path of destiny. So that's the path of destiny number.
The path of destiny.
Yeah.
So wait, let me just break this down for a second. So like you are named something.
Correct.
By your parents at random.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ascribing extraordinary meaning to this.
Mm-hmm.
That like your parents were in the mood that day. And so the universe is trying to say that you're going to become this kind of a person.
That's right.
Okay.
It doesn't include any, like if you have a nickname, if you changed your name.
Only birth certificate?
Right. It's like it doesn't specify, but that's what I'm saying is like depending on what you go by as now versus what you were born as versus if you got married and changed your fucking name.
What
it's
if you
like,
legally just change your name?
Or legally change, that's a... I mean, are we really I know. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk about it, we're going to have to pick at it a little bit with that kind of a lens because that's how we come at things.
Right. But I'm like, just even the explanation,
it's disproving itself, right?
Yeah,
well, that's the thing. It's just like, I'm just making sure I got it straight.
Right. So the name stuff, I think, is even more absurd because I, like, even if I'm trying to be logical, the birth date, I'm like, okay, cool. That's at least has something to do with, like, with the time of year you were born or whatever was happening at the time. Like, is there anything
She's
there?
A fall person.
Right. Exactly.
Because she was born in fall.
Well, and I figured out what our soul numbers are. I am
me and you?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I so I did the whole thing.
Is this like your
Jeffrey
credit
John
score?
Jeffrey John Ekman. Yeah, exactly.
You need
I did
a high
it
number?
All. Both your soul number and your life lesson number, you, is number four. So four.
Oh, unlucky for the Chinese.
Yeah, if you were Chinese, but you're not. So that's four true. Symbolizes the boundaries that provide security for the three. As what? The square, the second perfect shape in mathematics, four suggests solid foundations and perimeters that contain and protect. The determined and conservative four works hard to provide strong fences and square meals for the nourishment of the three family.
What does that mean?
That's your soul number. You are, so the a numerologist determining who you are, Jeff Ekman, this is who you are. You
I put meals on the table for the threes.
Are practical. You are cautious and reliable, the salt of the earth. You feel responsible for building solid foundations upon which the future depends. That is why you respect law and order. It also explains why your cupboard is never bare and you have something saved for that rainy day. You can be depended upon to be at the job every day and to finish any task assigned to you. You take pride in your work because it's an expression of yourself. You are concerned with the land and need to be connected in some manner through a garden and nature trips or environmental issues. Mm. Financial matters are of concern to you as well. They are another expression of the worth of your talents. You should avoid stubbornness, overwork, and hoarding. Don't you think that could be applied to anybody?
Yeah. I'm like, there's a bunch of that applies and right. a bunch that doesn't.
Now, mine is a little bit different because, like, my life lesson number, which is my birth date, is different from my soul number. But I discovered, okay. yeah, exactly. Like, how many fucking, you know. So my personal number is three, which is apparently the most imaginative and creative of the numbers. Ooh. Three is the mother, father, child. This family unit is symbolized by the triangle known as the first perfect shape in mathematics. You think about like the triangle representing threefold nature of divinity in most cultures, like the fucking...
The triad.
Yeah, the triad, the trinity.
The father, the son, and the ghost.
And this is where like part of me was being like, perhaps there's something to this, to which I had to immediately shake myself out of it and be like, Joya, no, you just like when you're complimented.
Right.
And that's what this
That was where I was. Like, I was actually going to go with that because right. I was like, "Yeah, that does sound like me—a person who's good,
right? Who believes in work ethic and like, yeah, like doesn't leave the cupboard bare." So, Joya, but, according to numerology, you are an extremely expressive individual who could influence others with your ability to communicate in a flamboyant style. Which, wow, right off the bat, I was like, "Nailed it, dude!" Somewhere there is a stranger waiting for you. What? All right. Whether you are speaking, warning, or acting, your bright, warm nature draws others who bask in your enthusiasm and energy. You are aware of your appearance because performing depends upon the impression you make on others. You dream big and your faith is often rewarded because positive thinking produces positive results. Because of your expansive nature, you meet people from different cultures and social strata, increasing your already broad and all-encompassing thinking. Do not scatter your energies and avoid exaggeration, self-indulgence, and foolish optimism. Thanks. I mean, yeah. I mean,
for what it's worth, these, as far as like base stuff about like who the person fundamentally is, they feel right.
Yeah.
They
exactly.
feel right to, and they feel different between me and you.
Yeah. It's not
in the ways that we are.
Yeah. But also, that was based on, I think, the Pythagorean system, whereas also there's that different, the Hebrew system. So your numbers are different based on which one you use.
Oh.
So that's, and then that's even different from the life lesson number. Like, okay, so I was born March 28th, 1987. So I would do 3 + 2 + 8 + 1 + 9 + 8 + 7. You're adding up all the integers of your month, birth day, and birth year.
Okay.
Or whatever. So that life lesson number for me is different. It's the number 2. So that's what's strange for me too, is like in one capacity I'm the number 3, and then sometimes I'm the number 2, and I'm like, okay, this
what's
is
what I can't.
What's
the number 2 like?
The number 2...
Poops.
Oh yeah, so the life lesson number is also... Yeah, number 2 is poops. It's supposed to be like the guidance. So I'm a really flamboyant, expressive person, but the number 2, it's also, apparently this is going to be a good period for me for partnership because 1 + 1 = 2.
Oh.
So marriage might happen during this time.
Ooh. Well, they said a stranger is waiting somewhere
just
in the world.
Some stranger. It says, my motto this year should be expect the unexpected, listen to your inner self, creative magic lies, and waiting to be explained. All of that kind of stuff. And that to me is just one of those things where I'm like, I can read it and have some fun in the same way that like Mad Libs is fun, Cootie Catchers are fun, fortune cookies are fun, but I'm not going to sit here and be like,
now my life needs to be
there's
lived.
There's a stranger waiting, you know? And I don't know why. I think like what got me so into this and why like these especially metaphysical sciences or whatever get people wrapped up, because it seems like you're using intellectualism to justify it, right?
Right.
You're like, and who came up with this 9 cycle and who, right. like it's all fucking man-made, dude.
Yeah.
Ugh, what are your thoughts on numerology?
Pretty much the same. I mean, people who have been listening to this show, I think, understand that we have a feeling of practicality, one would put it, maybe a disdain for faith without any logic.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a thing just for funsies, I'm cool with that. But I think it's a dangerous way of thinking because it allows you to ascribe your own choices and the meaning that you've created in your own life to something that wasn't your own
self. That's outside of you, right? That's bigger than yourself.
Yeah, so I think it's more dangerous of thinking than it seems on its surface because, yeah, it's fun and silly and what does it really matter? But it creates a kind of thinking of like, I'm not responsible for my own actions.
Right.
It's the universe.
And we've talked about this a little bit. And certainly your point with regards to astrology, I think, is that. And that's where any disdain, if that's what you're going to call it, comes from with me. Because, yeah, like you said, innocuous, kind of harmless beliefs. Mm-hmm. I really don't care, dude. Everybody has a favorite something and you have a reason for why you feel that way. But I've gotten into conversations with people where they like sincerely are like, I am a Gemini. And so therefore, obviously that explains this behavior.
Right.
And I have an issue with that because it's like, are very much in charge of.
I can act however I want because I'm a Gemini.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not responsible for how I'm
acting. A little hard-headed. I'm an Aries, so I'm a little stubborn. And it's like, or you're just stubborn because you're stubborn. Right. I don't know.
Well, as somebody who wants to build a solid foundation for the future, what was it that it said in my thing?
Yeah.
About like, it's important to build solid foundations for future ways of thinking or something to that effect. Because aren't we doing that with this podcast?
Yeah, because you're practical, cautious, and reliable. And so the emphasis for you in this year is on work, order, budgeting, foundations, close physical relationships, and the body. You have the body, whatever that, I guess like health and blah, blah, that kind of shit. You have an urge to organize all areas of your life, all of these things. But I'm like, most people are in a continual state of like trying to get shit together.
Wait a minute. It knows my birthday, right?
Yeah.
So it knows I'm 30.
Yeah.
An era where you start getting your life together and start organizing things like for real. I mean, hopefully you've done it before you're 30.
Right.
But like, I do feel like I'm doing that right now.
Because like I said, at first when I read that thing about specifically being flamboyant and performing and like being aware of your appearance, but that's not, I was like, that is the whole, I'm all of those things. But then I'm like, your name is Joy Amia Italiano because your parents just decided that was going to be your name.
Right.
It's hard for me to be like, that's why I'm an actor. And maybe I am because I have a crazy name and crazy people.
Let's go down that road. Let's say that is why you're an actor.
Yeah.
What does that matter? How does that change anything? What does that affect?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Who cares?
And also, it's like, I forget what we were talking about in terms of like being able to see the future, maybe like speaking to a fortune teller or something. It's like, if you knew that certain things were going to happen, would you change your behavior because of that? Like, is there ever actual any fate of any kind, you know?
Yeah, free will. Am I right?
So numerology is cool. It's a party trick that I would do. I'd be like, come close. I have the chart.
Right,
give me your
right.
full name, no nicknames. And, you know, you might hate your middle name, but I'm going to need that.
I also wanted to talk about supercomputers and kind of the state of supercomputers. And let me apologize in advance if this gets a little bit dry, because I want to use some numbers to show how exponential this movement really has been. Mm-hmm. So as of June 2016, the fastest supercomputer in the world is the Sunway Taihu Lite in China. Mm-hmm. They have a score of 93 petaflops of speed.
It's a petaflop.
So let's consider the scales of computing. To simplify, let's use storage. Roughly 1,000 kilobytes equals 1 megabyte, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
1,000 megabytes equals 1 gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 gigabytes equals 1 terabyte. And 1,000 terabytes equals 1 petabyte.
Ah, okay.
And this is at petascale computing.
Wow.
So 93 petaflops. Now, flop is called floating point operations per second. To give a sense of how quickly things have increased, in 1994, the world's fastest supercomputer worked at 1.7 gigaflops.
Uh-huh.
As we mentioned before, giga is followed by tera, which is followed by peta. So the increase in speed in only the last 20 to 25 years is 158,100,000 times.
That's crazy.
It's hard to fathom these numbers. Like, I just wanted to throw some of these out there so that people can start wrapping their minds around how quickly computing power has increased.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fastest supercomputer in 1994, 1.7 gigaflops, but the Mac Pro that was released in 2013, which is way outdated by now, ran at 7 teraflops. Versus 1.7 gigaflops. So it's thousands of times faster than the biggest supercomputer, which was the size of a house, in 1994. In 2013, it sits on your desk.
Right.
And it's like $3,000 instead of millions of dollars.
Right. We think of how much smaller things have been able to get, but are so much more powerful, right?
Right.
So it's not beyond the realm of imagination to think that those computers can be embedded into our skin,
right,
into our brains. Well, we've talked about that on previous episodes.
Yeah, I mean, when you can get down to the size of a red blood cell, who knows what we're going to be able to
do. When it comes to like medicine delivery and...
Well, it's because if you think about cell phones from the 80s to the early 2000s, they were just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Right. And the question was, is the cell phone going to become like minuscule?
Yeah.
And then the answer was, no, it's going to become more powerful.
Yeah.
It's going to go down to a certain size and then stay there and then become more and more powerful so that you can do more stuff.
Exactly. Like, we have this standard size that now we're like, it fits in my pocket. Huh? Right. It's fine.
So it's a computer in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And where do you go from there, you know, 30 years at, like, if the PC came out in, let's say, the 70s, mm-hmm. just a round number, it wasn't until the mid-2000s that the phone became the personal computing device. And so it's going to be another 30 or 40 years before we see the genuine next, like, explosion of...
Right. But still, we have a reasonable... It's not like... I mean, I have a pretty big fucking phone. I've got this LG 4. People make fun of me because they're like, it's a whole TV. But it's like, you know, there are certain things that you're... If you're still watching anything on your phone, you want it to be a certain size. Yeah. It's just silly to have it be, like, tiny because you want that... You got that screen time.
Right.
But, yeah, what do you think about fucking, you know... We all watched... Not all of us, maybe, but hopefully most of us in the audience watched Saved by the Bell. We know Zach Morris's giant-ass phone. Like, to think that that was so within our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right? His
oh, yeah, his giant
phone. Yeah. And that was slick, man.
I mean, he was the cool kid.
Yeah.
But so the supercomputers, like, back in the 70s, they were being used for, like, weather forecasting and aerodynamic research and stuff. And then in the 90s, it was used for, like, brute force code breaking, which is basically trying every code possible as fast as possible and hopefully getting the right one.
Right.
And if you have a computer that's fast enough, it can, like, brute force code entry. And now, laptop that we're recording this on can do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. These days, the supercomputers are used for things like molecular dynamics simulation.
Whoa.
So it's not hard to see how we might, in the future, be able to simulate the molecular dynamics of an entire planet. You know, I mean, they're expecting to go from 93 petaflops to 1,000 petaflops next year.
Next year?
Next year. There's supposed to be a computer that comes online, 2018, where it goes to an exaflop. Jesus now, that's the Christ. Scale above peta.
Right.
So exascale computing is on the horizon, and if 93 petaflops can do this...
I just wish it was a little bit farther away from pedophile, because every time you're about to say petaflop, I keep being like, you're 100,000 petaflops are just going to be coming our way next year?
If you store files on a petaflop computer, are they pedophiles?
Oh my God, so many mics dropped.
Moore's Law is the concept that computing capabilities increase at an exponential rate, roughly 18 months. And that's really only talking about putting more transistors on a chip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time like you get more transistors on a chip, it can execute more computer programs and stuff. But Ray Kurzweil has a concept that's related to Moore's Law called the Law of Accelerating Returns.
Who's Kurzweil? Why do I know him?
He's the futurist. He's the guy from The Transcendent Man.
Oh, right. Of course. Okay.
The Singularity is Near.
Yeah.
Is his book. He's a futurist who thinks that we're all going to be robots pretty soon. So he has a thing called the Law of Accelerating Returns, which basically is like Moore's Law, except it expands out to more scientific ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're doing all this work in genetics, but you don't know how the genetics work is going to affect AI research. And, like, you never know how one area of science will affect other areas of science.
Right.
Whereas Moore's Law is only talking about putting more transistors onto the chip.
Mm-hmm.
And we're running into walls with Moore's Law where, you know, remember how it used to be, you may or may not, from the 90s, you would quickly increase your chip speed from like 250 megahertz to 500 megahertz to gigahertz very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But then it stopped at about 2.5 gigahertz because any faster and they couldn't deal with the thermal load. Mm. So it kept getting hotter and hotter and they had to start putting more cores, more like chip cores in. And that was the way that they continued Moore's Law without actually continuing the megahertz increase.
But now we're getting to that point.
We're running into core issues. And then there's ideas about 3D chips where you start building not just on one surface, but on multiple surfaces. So Moore's Law has ways of being stopped, but then we have other ways of continuing it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. I mean, I find this all the time with technology, how it's like it's developing so much faster than our brains can handle it.
Right.
And it's like generations are going to get, they're going to be more comfortable with these things, just like, you know, a kid that grows up with a cell phone is gonna, you know, it's different, but I'm so blown away by that. And I don't know if I'm scared about it or if I'm like, yeah, yeah, all right.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where things can grow so fast that you don't know what's happening underneath you.
Right, exactly.
You know.
But.
Facebook.
I didn't have any favorite lines, did you?
Well, I mean, the movie stunk.
The movie was a big stinker. Oh. Although I liked that it opened up on Descartes' "I think, therefore I am" quote. Yeah. We were like, getting heady off the bat. And then the rest of it, I was like.
Oh, I wrote down a quote that I think I said to you where it was like, when things stop getting simulated and start getting real. The real world. Because they keep going into the real world.
I thought it was funny that Vincent D'Onofrio, when asked about what the theme of the movie was, he said it was about wanting something that you couldn't have. And I was like, what? Okay. Is that what it's about?
I guess an actor has to find their inner motivation.
It makes so much, it explains so much about his performance, man. Anyway.
So you can find us at ohthatsathing.com and ohthatsathing on Twitter and Facebook.
I'm at itsjoyamia on Twitter.
I'm at Jeffrey Ekman on Twitter.
And if you have anything that you would like to add, if maybe you think I'm totally full of shit with regards to numerology, let me know. It's fine.
Yeah. Just go onto that website, ohthatsathing.com. Let us know.
Yeah.
Have a good week, everybody.
See y'all.
Bye.